Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Today, we are joined by Anna Lydia Monaco, and she is an award-winning filmmaker, and I'm just so honored to have her with us. She reached out to me a little under a year ago to talk about a script that is so needed, and we're going to talk all about it on today's episode. Welcome, Anna!
Hello, hello, Jen!
I want to know all about you. I mean, I know about you, but tell the listeners all about you and how you got into this career.
Oh, into filmmaking, everybody's dream, or at least my dream growing up. But my career and my college life took me into a marketing, social media, PR career for several years where I worked with like Disney and AT&T and all these other amazing brands. And I was creating, like other publicists and other PR people and marketing people, stories for them. But the stories that I really wanted to tell were stories about women, and specifically women of color and underrepresented groups, like plus size people as well. And on a whim or a dare, I went back to school thinking that I was going to get an MBA. And while I was in school, a couple of my professors put me aside and gave me a come to Jesus talk. And I really should go into filmmaking, that that's really where my career and my life and my talents lied. And of course, like anybody else, you doubt yourself, especially when you're a woman of color, you grew up in a family that is very traditional in the sense that, yeah, there's a lot of college educated people in my family. I'm not the first. But people in my family have very traditional careers. Mm-hmm. So they're accountants, they're lawyers, or doctors, or dentists. My brother's a private, what is he, like an investigator, like a dog investigator or something like that, works with the sheriff's department. So very traditional careers. And here is this one woman in my family of many that wanted to be creative, that wanted to tell stories. And nobody encouraged me in my family, even though they saw me directing plays, they saw me writing, they saw me being artistic and really being really good at it, but they never supported that career because it was a hobby. And here are these professors, these award-winning professors, one of which was then a former executive director for the San Francisco Film Festival.
Wow.
And taking a couple of classes or teaching a couple of classes at Santa Monica College. And again, this was more on a whim. I was going to go get my MBA. And she's telling me to go and try to pursue my dreams. Nobody had ever told me that, or at least I'd never heard it. So I tell my husband, and my husband's like, of course, I've been trying to tell you.
Aww.
You're not going to be doing PR. I've been telling you for years. This is what you need to do. Our mutual friend, Tia Rue, same thing. She's like, of course you're going to go into film, but you've always, you know, wanted to do. So everybody but myself saw it. Obviously my family didn't see it. And I didn't think it was going to be hard to get into film school because nobody tells you, but it's harder to get into film school than it is to get into medical school.
Wow.
Here in the U.S., there's less film schools, traditional film schools, than there is medical schools. There's less people accepted per year. And the way you get accepted is quite hard. You have to have a portfolio. And if you're creative, somebody else that's creative is reviewing your work.
That's like standing naked in front of someone, right?
Exactly. And someone might tell you that this is excellent, this is wonderful, this is great. But then you apply to a certain film school, and it's not good enough for them, or it's not what they're looking for. So for example, one of the schools, I applied to three schools. I got into two. Art Center College of Design was one of them. And that's the school that I picked for several reasons, because it's an art school. It's one of the top art schools in the world, one of the top design schools in the world. They're known for being the number one incubator for the automotive industry. They have some amazing filmmakers that get that take their program and leave the school and do some amazing things. I call it the Art Center Mafia, because once you're on set, it's, you end up meeting so many people that went to Art Center, but you don't know it because USC is such a much, is such a bigger program.
Yeah.
That in comparison, you think like, oh, there isn't that many people from Art Center, but literally at every single set, there's been an Art Center connection. So I went through the program. I had some amazing professors. I obviously was a non-traditional student. I didn't go straight out of high school, nor this is my second degree. Like I said, my first career was in PR, marketing, and social media. And I was the only Mexican-American woman accepted in the program that particular term. Wow. It was a total of 12 of us, and it was a total of 3 women accepted. One Chinese immigrant, the other girl was Central American, and then there was me. I was maybe the oldest in the program, possibly not, because it's Art Center, and one of the things about Art Center is that a lot of people go back to school to Art Center to specialize in something artistic or design or film, because that's what the school is all about. And each class is mostly focused on design and art and filmmaking. So it's very, very, very intense. So I graduated with a lot of debt because it's very expensive and it is a private school. While I went to school, I tried to work the first 2 terms that I went to school. And then I realized like 7-9 classes.
Yeah, there's no
4-hour daily commute. I'm married on top of that. It was just impossible. So I did freelancing gigs here and there, but I could no longer work full time. I definitely couldn't handle, you know, doing the intensity of doing PR or social media. I couldn't. And while you're there, if you're there for 4 years, you discover your voice at a, you know, in a filmmaking school or a film program. And that's what you do when you're younger and you have a portfolio, or you have some crappy work that you've already done on your own. So when you get out, you kind of know what you want to do when you get out. Because I was older and because I was only going to go through the program for a couple of years because I already had a degree, my focus while I was there was to build my portfolio and to focus on what I really wanted to focus on and refine it. Not find my voice, but refine my creative voice and what I wanted to do. And I came out of there knowing 100% that my passion is telling the stories of women and people of color and marginalized communities in non-traditional settings that they haven't been put in before. So for example, a horror film, you don't see horror films with Latinos, you know, or if you do, the first person that gets killed is usually the black guy or the black girl. Right. So what if we make the lead of that horror film a black character, kind of like Get Out did? So those are the type of stories that I wanted to tell, where there's some sort of social commentary without it being shoved in your face, where someone outside of that culture doesn't feel like they're being preached to, but instead learns and has a good time doing it. Because let's be real, nobody wants to go see a film and walk out of there with a headache, you know, and you're like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. I mean, we see the news every day. We don't need that. We need entertainment. But I also feel that entertainment has a responsibility to do something much bigger and to educate the masses, or to make a comment on something that is important in today's society. And people pick on how to tell it. It can be a horror film. It can be a comedy. It could be a dramedy. That's more my strength is dramedy / thriller. That's more where my voice has gone. But there's so many different ways of doing it. And I came out with an amazing portfolio that I'm very, very proud of, that's offered me the opportunity to meet people like you. Aww. And have my films in festivals, to enter scripts in contests and find out that they are worthy to be produced.
Yes, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Yeah.
to have my professors say like, yay, this is what you should be doing. So in a nutshell, I mean, a very long nutshell, that's my journey.
No, I love it, Anna, because I think so many of us, you know, life tells us we have to go one way, even though in our hearts we have a dream. And we're so often told that your dream isn't feasible, especially if you're in Southern California and want to be in the film industry. Like, oh, good luck, kid. But you had a dream, but you also had a talent, and you also had the willingness to dedicate yourself completely to craft your art even stronger. And that's the difference. It's not just about having a dream. It's also about having the talent and the work ethic to do it. So I think it's a really inspirational story, but it's also an example of you got to work hard, but you also need connections, and it all flows together. So I love it.
Oh, thank you. And then you tapped on something really important, is that you need to work really, really, really hard, because you're from Southern California and you know how talented people are in LA. And when I say talented, I mean, you can literally walk down the street and see someone that's just 17 years old with their first camera, taking some photos that could be on the cover of, you know, the New York Times. They're that good. So you're not competing with like other people at your level. You are literally competing with people that are 20 times your level. So I've seen people come from New York and leave within less than a year because they can't make it in LA. Yeah. And it's not to say that you can't make it. It's just that you got to work so hard. You got to believe that this is something that is big. And you said this to me earlier when we were having our offline conversation. This is something bigger than you. Like you have a much bigger responsibility than just making a movie and making money. It's like much, much, much bigger. And until people feel it in their bone, in their gut, it's part of their life. I'm sure there's plenty of people that are talented that didn't make it, and there will be from here on out. But I think that those that really, really make it, put all that together, and somehow, some way, the right people at the right place connect with them, and it creates a conversation and it makes their work possible.
Yeah. And speaking of making their work possible, I'm excited for you, but I'm frustrated also, and I'm sure you are too, that now is just beginning to be the time where we can, you know, make sure people of color are more highlighted in film. I mean, it's so important that people like you and filmmakers are you saying, no, this is the focus of my work and I'm going to make it happen, and that it still isn't happening the way that it should. So thank you. And not only people of color, but also, you know, your script that we'll talk about, also people of size too.
And I think that's just one of the things that have changed so much from the moment I started film school. Believe it or not, 2.5 years ago, people didn't take Netflix seriously. And as you see now, we all talk about Netflix, and we all talk about the different shows and the things that they're doing that no other network has had, and I hate to say it, the balls to do, or they've been scared to do it. And Netflix has been really, really ballsy, and they opened the doors for a Hulu. They've opened the doors for Apple TV. They've opened the doors to so many different networks and opportunities and stories, which is great. But at the end of the day, I have met so many people at various meetings, at various stages of the executive ladder and production, and they've been mostly white males.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of work to be done, because like, you know, in any industry, it trickles down. If you have people at the top that believe in the mission of, you know, inclusivity versus diversity, of being inclusive, like truly inclusive, then it will happen, because they will look outside of, yeah, I got this amazing guy who's a director that I worked with before, but can I get also the names of other women, a woman of color, women of sizes, of women of different ages? Because that's another thing that Hollywood unfortunately has to work with, is that there's ageism in Hollywood as well. But I'm at the right time, and my husband says this all the time when we see a TV show, and he's like, oh my God, there's a Latino. I would have never known, because my husband is a white guy. So he's like, I never would have noticed it had I not married you.
Yeah.
Because now I can pay attention to that, and I notice it when it's missing. And I think that's what happens with people like you, when you have friends or colleagues that are of color, that are of size, that are of a marginalized community. When you see them on TV, you're like, or in the movie screen or an ad, you're like, oh my God, that's like my friend so-and-so. And it makes you feel really, really good. And it completes like an overall story about a community that many times we don't see. Like, unless you're in the middle of Indiana, most communities, especially in LA and Southern California, New York, all the metropolitan cities, they're very, very diverse. They're diverse in sizes, they're diverse in ages, they're diverse in nationalities and sexual orientations. And it's healthy for us to see diversity, because some of the students that came from China to my school, and this was the first time they had ever seen a person of color, ever. Ever. Wow. Like, the only time they had seen someone black was in a gang related film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important to point out. Like, yeah, you nailed it on the head, because I think some people who are struggling against, you know, white privilege and those messages, they don't get it. But you nailed it on the head. Like, when we, especially in film and social media and websites, only show one color and one example and one narrative, then it leads to such a narrow vision of other people's life experiences and existence that is so warped and so racist and sizist and sexist that it does such damage and harm. And that's why we need to be having these conversations, and people like you are doing this work that's so, so important, because film is something that we still use to really tell our stories.
And it's becoming more and more important. Like, you see children, like 2-3 year olds, are holding onto their iPhones or their iPads, and they're looking at these little mini stories, like even 2-minute stories or little 2-minute videos or whatever. Like, what are you showing your child?
Yeah.
And what are you seeing that you're then communicating to your kids, as in, these are my friends, these are the people I look at, this is how I hate myself because of my size or my skin color or my hair texture, versus, oh my God, do you see this person on TV that, although they're not like my neighbors, one day you might meet these people. Mm-hmm. One day you might go to school in Southern California or LA or somewhere else, and you might be sitting next to someone, a plus size black woman with kinky hair, or, you know, a plus size Latina with blue eyes. Like, if you have all these, you know, images in front of you, it helps an adult, but it helps you be a better adult and parent and aunt and uncle and godmother and godfather to the next generation of children, which honestly, we all have a responsibility to guide with our words and our stories and our images. So even if you're not a filmmaker, the fact that you came to me and said, like, oh my God, yes, I want to talk about this and this is important, that's what we need. We need more people to talk about this. We need more people. This is important to say, we support this. We want to hear this. Your job is just as important, if not more, because there's a ton of filmmakers out there, people of color that want to tell these stories. But if nobody supports us, we're not going to be able to.
Yeah.
You know, we need the eyeballs. We need people to talk about it. We need people to say, like, yes, we want to hear this. Because you know what? If somebody says, we want to see these things, look at what happened One Day at a Time. Like, it got renewed. It got canceled by Netflix. It got picked up by another network because so many people complained about the cancellation of the show and said, this show is necessary because it talks about gay issues. It talks about, you know, mental issues. It talks about, like, single motherhood. It's the representation of Latinos in the media. So if you talk about it, you as an audience member, it's your responsibility to say, I want to see this. Because we as creators, we as filmmakers and storytellers, we're looking to you. We need you. Like, we want to hear you, and we want to know that our work is appreciated, because otherwise we can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Anna. So, so important. So let's talk about your script. And while we connected, please introduce us to your script.
Oh, Lola.
Yes, Lola.
My dear Lola. So Lola is a short dramedy script. And for those people that don't know what a short is a story that's told in less time than a feature film. A feature film is anywhere from an hour and 20 minutes all the way on up, right? A short usually is less than an hour. This particular short will be less than 20 minutes. And the reason I wrote it for that time frame is because most Oscar nominated shorts are under that time. So
you're smart.
Yeah. So I'm a little marketer, obviously my background. So I'm like, I want to make sure that when I write this story, I wanted to set up Lola for success.
Yes.
By doing all the right things. So under the guidance and advice of Joy Kekkon, which is a writer and a showrunner, and she's done work with The Wire. She won awards for The Wire. She's worked on Marvel shows. She's now on a Disney show. I wrote this script.
Wow.
And I wanted to tell a story about women I don't hear about and women I do not see. And that is a plus-size Latina. And I wanted to write a story about a plus-size Latina that hasn't found herself, that hasn't discovered the beauty of her curves or her fat or her wiggles or her everything, you know, whatever you want to call it. Straight out of college, first job, first relationship, first adulthood. And yet the people she should be loved by the most, whether it's her family, whether it's her best friend, whether it's the medical community, they all have this undeniable bias against her body. So she is in a position of life and death and doesn't even realize it. And she has to take ownership of that. And she has to push against all conventions.
Yeah.
That is why it was super important for me to write this, because we see Shrill, you know, which is great. It's a great show. And she discovered herself at that swimming pool scene that we've all talked about, how beautiful it was. But we haven't yet seen the ugliness that happens when you have family telling you that you're not good enough, that your body is too big, that your friends are being supportive in a way, in that your friends are being supportive and pushing you to lose weight because they don't want you to die, that your boyfriends are ashamed of you, that you're not moving up in your career because you are of size. I haven't seen any of that.
Yeah.
Now, not to be preachy, because again, nobody wants to see a preachy movie. It's like you want to be entertained. I package that all together with some reality of the fact that I know what it's like to go to the doctor many times for pain or for other issues and be told that my issues are all related to weight and having an emergency surgery when it had nothing to do with weight, that I really had an issue. So I put all these things together. I researched, I talked to women. I want to make this film happen because I feel like it needs to be told. People need to see this because there's so many amazing friends out there that pushes to the brink of you have to lose weight or you're going to die. And they mean well, but we're not going to die unless we're really, really ill.
No, and actually when people say those things to us, because I've had like many interventions by friends, usually after we've had one too many drinks at a bar, thinking of that one night, it just made me feel worse about myself, a lot worse about myself. And I didn't like go to the gym the next morning. I sat there sad eating the next morning. So it doesn't help. There's a difference between that and being like, hey, I signed up for this 5K. Want to do it together? But with the intention of just wanting to do it together, not to make the big girl walk, but like wanting to do positive things that are different than sitting someone down and being like, you're so fat. Yeah, it doesn't work.
I had a friend who was a model and we work with, and 1 year, those annual issues, I think it's People Magazine when they show the people on the cover that lost.
Oh yeah, the weight loss one. Yeah.
The weight loss ones, right? She literally mailed me a magazine and highlighted and put little tabs on it.
Oh my God.
The thing was, is that there's different sizes of different people. You're going to show my photo. So people are going to be like, oh my God, she's not really that big. I'm a size 16. I was an 18. I've been a 22. My major issue has always been, I have major thyroid issues. Like,
yeah.
Like I take medication. I have PCOS. I have hypothyroidism. I have Hashimoto's. Doesn't matter how much I work out, I will never, ever, ever be a size 8.
Yeah.
It's just not in my body. I'm not a big time eater. If you eat, go for it. I would love to have a big appetite because then at least I could say like, oh my God, I ate myself to this size. It was worth it. But it's not. It was like, it's a little gland in my neck called the thyroid and it screws everything up. And I've shared a little bit of my journey on social media of all these medical issues that have come up. So when this friend and colleague sent me this magazine, mm-hmm. was during the time that A, you didn't publicly announce what was wrong with you health-wise. Yeah. Because I worked in the PR industry and you had to keep up appearances. You never talked about the time you hemorrhaged in the middle of the hallway because, you know, your PCOS was out of whack. You never talked about the time that your hair was falling out so much because your thyroid was out of whack. You just didn't talk about it. So she had no idea that that particular time and place, I was really, really, really sick. And they hadn't even found a combination of medication that would help me wake up in the morning.
Yeah, just exist.
It wasn't even like, at that point, I was like, I don't care what size I am. That's the least of my worries. Like, I don't want my hair to fall out. I don't want to grow hair on my face. I don't, you know, want to feel faint every morning. I don't want to hemorrhage in the middle of the hallway of my office and have to go to the emergency room. Like, that was the least of my worries. She was concerned about my body. And it wasn't even the health ramifications. It was the comment of, you will be so beautiful if you were slimmer, if you were smaller. And obviously the comment about that one time that I had that one small fries at 5 a.m. in the morning at the airport, not realizing that that was the first bite of food I had had in 24 hours because I was too busy planning that trip that we were on our way for to do media trainings. So she had like no concept because at the time, we're talking like 12, 13, 14 years ago, nobody talked about their health.
Yeah.
Nobody talked. And still to this day, I rarely say what's wrong with me. Recently, I have because I realized there's more and more people that do have issues that need to hear about it. They need to know that it's okay, that you can live, that you can go back to school, that you can be married, that you can have children, that you can live a normal life. Even if you have all these health issues,
of course,
that all together, all that frustration and anger and seeing what was out in the media and recognizing what my responsibility is to the next generation of children that are coming up in this world, I wrote this script. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote it, I wanted to get the insight from a plus size advocate, which is yourself, somebody that was in the plus size community, which was a blogger, like a fashion, plus size fashion blogger. And I also wanted to get the insight from a nonprofit organization that dealt with fat phobia and medical bias in the fat community. And I got insight from all of you and it was all positive, but I couldn't find, and I still haven't been able to find, my lead actress because she literally is going to be in 90% of that film.
Yeah.
She's going to carry that film. And it has to be someone of color and it has to be someone plus size. And she's going to be speaking in English because I'm American. So I want an American story. This is a very American story. And I was thinking that I was going to have to file my script like other people do, and it happens in Hollywood all the time, where they say they shelf the story for a year, they shelf the story for 10 years. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have to shelf it. But before I did, I decided to enter it into 3 festivals. And if I got any attention, I figured this means I should pursue the story forward. If I don't, then that means I do need to can the story for now. Just shelf it. Not kill it, just shelf it for now and focus on other things. And a couple of months ago, and it takes forever, just to give your audience like an idea. You submit to a film festival anywhere from 3 to 6 months in advance of the notifications going out, let alone the time and the date of the actual festival.
Wow.
So if I submitted something in January, then I wasn't going to get any notification until March or April for anything. So the first notification I received from the earliest festival that I submitted in January was that I was a finalist.
Ah! And
and this was for a log line, just the log line, which is basically what the story is about. And I'm like, okay, that's good. But they haven't read my script yet. So let's see if I get into any of the other festivals, because I'm still doubting myself.
Yeah.
Right? I have all these people already attached. I have the director of photography attached. I have the costume designer attached. I have one of my former professors, the professor that I told you that wrote for The Wire, that guided me through the process, that has already committed a certain amount of money to make the film. So I already have like all these other things. Okay, but I don't have my lead actress. So what the heck am I going to do? So I just recently received notification that I am a finalist in the Oaxaca Film Festival, and that is for the actual script, not the log line, but the script, the story. It's a viable story.
Yay!
When I got the notification and I got the little like black and bold, like you cannot make this public. And I'm like, why? This is such a big deal. This is like a huge, 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 huge deal. So the Oaxaca Film Festival is an international festival where people from all over the world go to one of the southern states in Mexico, and they meet and see films from all over the world, including Latin America, the US, Asia. There's going to be directors, going to be producers, going to be actors. Obviously, this is going to afford me the opportunity to be in the same room as other, you know, as other directors, as other producers, as people that may want to invest in my story, may want to look at my script and say, like, you know what, this is a great short, but why don't we make it into a feature? Ooh. So there's also that possibility as well. Like, I'm sure all of us, especially in the plus size community, would like to see an entire feature film that's not a comedy.
Yeah.
With a plus size women. I'm tired of seeing, I mean, God bless all the actresses that have made like the rom-coms and the comedies. That's fabulous. That's super great. And they've done a lot for us in the terms of visibility. But I think that we can also show some kind of dramatic aspect to our lives and to our acting and to our story. And there's only been a couple of those.
Yeah, Precious comes to mind. I'm trying to think of any others of like a woman of color and a woman of size being the lead in a drama.
Woman of color, woman of size, no.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't happen. So, which is sad. If you think about it, we're living in 2019, which is kind of sad if you think about it, because that just goes to show how much representation matters.
Mm-hmm.
We need to see ourselves on the screen.
Absolutely.
See that not every Latina lives in East LA. Not every Latina is a blue collar chola gang member, you know, house cleaning woman. Like, mm-hmm. there's so many amazing stories out there. And going to this film festival is going to provide me with the opportunity of hopefully meeting my lead actress, or at least being connected to somebody that could be my lead actress, and then meeting other people that can help finance a movie. And by help finance, I think I told you my previous movie that's made it into festivals, I did it for under $5,000. So
which is unheard of, for the film.
Again, I'm a good producer because I worked in PR, so I know people that can obviously pay forward favors that I did to them in the past.
Yeah.
So it works in that way as well. So for this film, it'll be a little bit more expensive, I'm sure, but I don't think I will need to spend more than 20, including post-production, including marketing, including PR, including like doing like the color and everything else. I doubt it. I will need to spend more than 20. So that's what I'm hoping to raise. And I'm hoping to find, you know, my actress in October when I go out there, or sooner, you know, rather than later. And although my dream was to produce and film this movie this summer, obviously it's not going to happen, but if I can film it in the fall or in the winter here in LA, I could totally do that.
And I just hope that this film festival brings such a buzz that all of this comes to fruition without you having to do a lot of work to raise that money.
I hope so. I really hope. There's a lot of people with money.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
people that really want to see this, and we need this story, and it's an important one. And it's not just, you know, everything that's so important that you touched on, women of color, women of size, but even, you know, specifically part of the storyline is also the medical bias. And that's something that we're really starting to talk about more, thank goodness. And we're having studies come forward and a lot more discussion, and just that New York Times article about the mistreatment of people of size and fertility that I got a little quote in. But, you know, we're having these stories come up more, but it's still so taboo. And so it needs to be in film.
And then, you know what? I think that film has a way of moving society, of moving that needle.
Yes.
More than sometimes documentaries, like a narrative film. I love documentaries. That's literally how I got into filmmaking, was photography and documentaries. So in no way am I saying this medium is not important. Saying that for the everyday middle America, regular people like you and I, a narrative film is where it's going to really strike a chord.
Especially this story. Yeah.
Especially this kind of story. You want to see it in a dramatized way where it doesn't become a parody of somebody, but it's something real that you can sympathize with, a story that you can sympathize with, but a woman that you can relate to. Even if you're not someone of size, I mean, we've all been in a situation as women where people are not listening to us, or they think they know better than us, or they want to mansplain everything that we tell them. We've all been there. And I think that I've done a really good job of writing that in the pages to when it's now being filmed and shown. You can see that. You can hear that. You can feel that. And then hopefully that will strike a nerve and help you better. And, you know, if you're a plus size woman that's been in that situation, you'd be like, oh my God, somebody's listened to me. I know somebody else knows what it feels like, because, you know, as plus size women, we feel really, really alone. Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, like a friend of ours, a relative of ours can be like, maybe I shouldn't on the down low be sending these People magazine, you know, ads and stories to my friend.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that, because it's highly offensive and it's not going to help her. Or it's not going to help him. Or
not only that, I mean, all that you shared about your medical history and all that you've been going through, and I'm so sorry, and that's a lot, but there's so many people listening who have PCOS that can identify with it. But even if you didn't have all that going on, that person never should have done that. That's so wrong. And I wish People magazine would do a follow-up on 5 years ago, we featured these people, and this is what's happening in their lives now, because that dramatic of weight loss, we know statistically, for most people is not sustainable. So she's basically telling you, here, do this thing that might harm your body even more. And yeah, it's so frustrating. But people do that because of the messages we've been taught as a society from all the Hollywood films that tell us a size 2 not only is obtainable, it should be the standard, which there's no scientific backing of that. We all come in different sizes and shapes and colors and backgrounds, and we should all be represented, and it shouldn't be this hard and this difficult. And I love that your script is already getting this buzz, because it's so needed.
Thank you. And I hope people appreciate it. And I hope people not just appreciate it, but take into action what they learn and what they see on the screen, to not just be better people overall, but to try to make a difference with someone of size that is next to them, with someone that is undergoing some major medical issues, that you don't judge them immediately and say, well, this happened to you because you are big. Because many times being big is a consequence of your medical issues, like it has been for me. So we don't know. And in no way am I promoting, like, you can be a 500, 600, 700 pound woman, but I'm also not going to tell you that you're unhealthy because you're 500, 600, or 700 pounds, because I have met 110 pound women that are very, very, very sick. And they are seen as the ideal physically in Hollywood, in LA, and overall, this is what a woman should look like. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they are healthy. I think in general, women don't need, and I'm not saying you shouldn't judge, because that's not real. We all make judgments. Like, even by me saying don't judge other people, I'm judging them by making that, you know, that comment or that judgment or thinking these things. But in general, I think that we just need to be kinder to each other, and realize that somebody's journey is maybe not your own, and that just because, you know, you're happy in this body and you want everybody else to be this body because you see this as the, you know, the epitome of health, for somebody else that might not be possible, you know, and we need to be a little bit more open-minded in this day and age, that there's tons of chemicals in our food. There's hormones that are out of whack. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of issues that are happening to a lot of people that make us gain or lose weight. And it's not just all related to food, and it's not all related to exercise. It might be related to genetics. It might be related to other things. And we just need to see these images and these stories so we are better. Like, yeah. We can be better. And I know it sounds like a huge, lofty goal. I'm going to change the world. But I do feel that if I take a responsibility for what I put out there in media and the stories that I create, I can, to some extent, make a difference. And that's really what I've wanted to do from the get-go of going back to school. It's like, I do want to focus on this. I do want to tell these stories. This is absolutely needed. And these stories don't just matter to women of color like myself, but they matter to my friends that are white. They matter to my friends that are old, that are young. They matter to my husband, who is white, who's become more empathetic towards, you know, Latinos and Blacks and Asians once he married me, because now he has someone close to him that that he can see personally, you know, being like feeling these things, and now he can relate, like, holy crap, this is a big deal. Not being shown in media, it's a big deal not to see these stories. And so we need this. We need these for men. We need these stories for men. We need them for women of color in general. Sounds like a really lofty ideal, but I think we can do it if we support indie filmmakers like myself, because that indie filmmaker one day can get a multi-million dollar movie deal. And we'll remember all the people that supported him or her from the get-go, and we'll come back and go to our audience as advisors. Like, Jen, I will always go back to you. We'll always be thankful. Like, what do you think? What should I do? Is it something that a story that other women like yourself will enjoy, and women and children? And so your audience has an equal voice to the creative output that Hollywood puts out there, especially independent filmmakers.
Thank you so much. Everything you just said, it's so important and needed, and it takes the work of people like you that are willing to do it. And I can't imagine it's easy, and I can't, you know, it's so necessary, but I wish it wasn't such a fight too, right? I wish it wasn't so hard to be like, hi, I'm a woman of color and I want to see myself represented in the film industry. Like, why is this? Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's really hard. Even in film school, a couple of commentaries that I got from my classmates were that my content was too Latino, or that it was too feminine. And then they would turn around and copy my work, which was hilarious. Or that people wouldn't care about dramedies. They cared about sci-fi. They cared about, you know, action stuff. And again, I went to school three and a half years ago, because I graduated a year ago. So 3.5 years ago, again, it was a different world.
Yeah.
Now everybody's realizing, yeah, we've seen Moonlight. We've seen Us. We've seen Get Out. We've seen
Black Panther.
Oh my God, Black Panther. Yeah. Like, we've seen all these different things that tell us, yes, it's important. But then we also have to realize, and this is a hashtag I use all the time, is diversity is more than black and white. There is, you know, Latinos. And I know for Latinos, it's a little bit harder, because you can be Puerto Rican, you can be Cuban, you can be Central American, you can be Mexican, you can be from Argentina, South American, and we all look very different. Versus when you're black, you're black, right? There's just different shades of black. So I get that many times people don't know how to identify a Latino, because we all look so very, very, very different. But we do need that representation.
Absolutely.
Diversity is more than black and white. We need to see Latinos. We need to see Asians. We need to see Middle Eastern actors and stories. It's because our world is such that we need to see that in order to live that. Otherwise, you know, we're in this tiny little silo that doesn't exist anymore.
Yes, yes, yes. And I know you touched earlier on, you know, in exposing our children to all different stories and narratives, and from books to movies to TV shows of people of all different colors is so incredibly important too. So moms listening in, as you're, you know, monitoring what your kids are watching, keep all of this in mind too. And I love how you shared also that, you know, we as consumers have a much bigger voice than we realize. I mean, I know Shrill is just one example, but it's made such a big impact of, I mean, their memes still continue to go viral and do really well because it's these messages that especially people of size have been longing to hear. But because we keep sharing these messages, the show will continue to be renewed. So it's really important. But tapping in and supporting, you know, independent filmmakers and independent films is so critically important, and supporting the work of women and women of color and women of size and, you know, people who are LGBTQ and non-binary. It's all so important that we're standing behind people who are marginalized, because these are the people most often that hold our stories.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. And there's so many ways to support. Like right now, you're supporting me by sharing, you know, my journey and my story and telling others to support me. Hopefully your audience can do the same. They can follow me on Twitter. They can follow me on Instagram. They can find out where my film is being shown at a festival and go show up.
Yeah.
Show up. If you can't, most film festivals have days where they're like kid friendly days, you know, you can take your kids to go see some independent, like animated film that is created by some, you know, woman in the middle of nowhere. And she did it with all her hard work and money. And it would be great for you to support them and follow them on Instagram and share their story and, you know, share their content and tell others. And if there's a film festival in your community that you know about it and you think there should be more of this type of content, tell the organizers. And it takes just a tweet. Like it literally takes a tweet. Like,
yeah,
you know, Jen, you're in New Mexico. You're gonna be like, hey, the New Mexico Latino Film Festival, have you heard about Anna Lydia? She has this great film. I want to see it here. And my friends and family want to see it here. If you reach out to festivals, trust that they will go out of their way, because they want to see butts on those seats. They want to see audience there. They want to see those films shown in other places. And every festival wants to discover the next big Sofia Coppola. You know, they want to discover the next big voice. So they're open, like discover those little independent festivals and, you know, tweet me, tweet others, like follow the hashtags. Like most independents were really open-minded and open to going to these festivals. And if you can support us and, you know, sponsor us, that's even better, because a lot of us create our craft with our own money. And as Jen knows, I have self-financed every single project. There has not been, other than a friend here and there that actually got recognition at the end credits, there was a few people that, like, one person got breakfast for my actors one day, another person got crafty. Like, there's ways to support filmmakers, and trust that we are all usually very, very thankful and pay it forward. And it'll be something that you will feel really, I think you will feel really, really satisfied when you realize that you've just supported art, and art lives
yes.
on.
That's
one of the things,
yes.
art lives on.
Well, thank you so, so much. Where can we go to support you? Where can we find you?
You can find me all over social media, but I live mostly on Twitter, and it's Anna Lydia Monaco. That is the same name that I use on my website, that you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, but I spend a lot of time on Twitter. My reel is on my website. If any filmmakers or organizers want to see copies of my work or in any way, shape, or form want to sponsor me, my email is annalydiamonacle@gmail.com. I think my PayPal is the same and my Venmo is the same. So you can just reach out to me, and I would love, love, love to talk to any of your listeners and see what else I can do, what other stories I can tell, and how I can support other women, specifically marginalized women that have never seen their voices on the screen.
Mm. Well, you're incredible. I really, really appreciate your time and your wisdom and your work and everything that you've shared. I'm going to put everything in the show notes. I highly, highly encourage people to go follow, go support, and we're going to see Lola on the big screen. I know we are.
I hope so. I cannot wait. Thank you for all of your support, Jen. You're an angel.
Oh, well, thank you. It's easy to support incredible work. So thank you. Oh,
thank you.
All right. Well, take care, friends. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
Parents, are you looking for a fun, interactive way to teach your preschooler? Look no further. The Preschool Box is an educational subscription box designed to teach important reading and math concepts. Each month, receive a box packed full of fun, ready-to-use educational crafts and activities that make learning exciting and engaging. Learn more at thepreschoolbox.com and use coupon code PLUSMOMMY5 to get $5 off your first box.